Hey, it's Laser Graves, and it's Halloween, and I'm very excited about this episode. My name's EK.
Hi, EK. My name is Mariah. Nice to meet you.
We decided to be informal about the introductions.
Yep. Actually, I was walking the dogs today, and I was listening to another podcast, and they just said their first names, and then later referenced their last name, and I was like, oh, I never even thought they had a last name. Why do I always say my whole name, including middle? So, let's go informal.
By this time, we're like almost 50 episodes in, we should be able to just say our first name.
I think we're on an official first name basis.
Okay, there you go, listeners. You made it. Woo-hoo! You now know us. Okay, this episode, we got a lot to get through. A little warning, may or may not, but I have a feeling like it may be a longer episode.
Your intensity level is off the charts.
Okay, yeah.
It's in the red.
It is.
It's very high. I feel worried because I don't know if it can live up to the hype.
Well, okay, little backstory. When we first decided to start this podcast, there were a very short list of movies that I thought, this is why I want to podcast, is talk about these movies. And this was one of them. And I don't think we've done any of the other ones yet. We've just been holding out.
What are some of yours?
House 2 is a big one. Yeah. So that one, there's a bunch that we haven't done yet. Well, I guess we did Night of the Comet was one that I really wanted to do when we did that one.
I only have one.
Teen Witch. I know. We haven't done it yet.
Teen Witch.
We'll get to it.
Teen Witch. Teen Witch.
Okay, this is mine, though. This is number one, one of my all-time favorite films ever made, period. Trick or Treat, 1986. Don't ask me why, because I don't have an answer. I kind of have an answer, actually. I love this movie to the point of, you know, at the end of every episode of Laser Graves, I say you can follow us on Instagram. And my handle is Death at 33 RPM.
Yep.
That's the European title for Trick or Treat, the movie that we're about to cover.
That's like top-notch, total supreme-level dork.
I know.
I love it.
I love this movie so much.
Yes. Although last night as we watched it, I said, how old were you when you watched this? And my voice got real high like that. Because as a parent, looking back, I was shocked that you watched this when you were a child.
Definitely. I didn't even think about it. I've never even put two and two together, but watching it last night and now having children that are probably older than I was when I watched it, yeah, that is kind of a shocker.
But, you know, it was the 80s. Who cares?
And it was metal. Like, I was a metalhead in the 80s, so it was, I didn't even give this two thoughts. Like, the language, the content, that was just all part of the scene.
Yeah, you were a rough kid.
I definitely was a rough kid. Okay, well, we'll get into it, but just needless to say, I'm extremely excited. This is our Halloween episode, and we've been holding out since the moment we started this podcast. It's like, this has got to be our Halloween episode.
Now we're going to pinch the loaf.
So we're going to do it. We threatened you last week that we were going to bring out the big guns, and this is it. So if you're totally disappointed at what we were revealing this week, just listen and then you'll be like, thanks for that B-movie like 5 point on IMDb rating. What? They don't know what they're talking about.
Fools.
Okay, before we get into it, I think I had a minor thrift store find, but okay. Did you have anything this week?
I had two finds, which I purchased both things. The first, I sent you a picture.
Okay, so, and I think I know what it is.
The first thing was, it's a coffee mug.
Right.
That says, go nuts for donuts. And actually, they had several different versions. It was like, go nuts for donuts, and then like, donuts forever. You know, it was just silly, but go nuts for donuts, I've actually said many times.
Do you remember on Twin Peaks, the donut disturb?
Oh, so good.
Okay.
So I saw that. And then I turned around and right in front of me was, unfortunately, not something I needed. So it's going to be gifted. But I couldn't just leave it there.
Oh, do tell.
Well, okay. So I obviously don't need salt and pepper shakers. But there they were. And I couldn't leave them. It was hot dogs. Two hot dogs.
Just... Are they in buns?
Yes, hot dogs in buns, salt and pepper shakers.
Oh, man.
Yes, and I was like, gotta have those.
I feel like salt and pepper shakers, I don't know if you agree with this, I feel like it's so easy to buy them because they're just, the variety is so fun that you're like, yes. Oh, those are fun salt and pepper shakers. Yes. And then before you know it, you have like 12 pairs of salt and pepper shakers, right. And you don't need any of them.
And I do not want to be a salt and pepper shaker collector on any level. So nobody buy me salt and pepper shakers. I have too many. I have 4. What did you find at a thrift store?
This week I just found one tape, but I've never heard of it. And it looks totally awesome. We'll definitely have to do it as an episode.
What's it called?
It's called Warriors of the Wind, and it's an animated film, post-apocalyptic animation. What? Yeah, I've never heard of it.
What country?
It kind of looks like Japanimation on the back, but it's got to be a U.S. release. But it's a New World film, which does all kinds of really great movies that we love. So, House 2, for one. I think, I've just never even heard of it, but the cover's amazing, and I didn't even realize it was animated. I thought it was just a cool, like, animated cover, like they did in the 80s, and then I flipped it over and saw the stills from it, and then started reading it, and man, it sounds amazing. So, this is hopefully one of those ones that just slipped through the cracks, and we've never heard of it. I think it's, like, 1984 or 1985.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard of it, and instantly it conjured up a like visual of just people hitting the wind with swords.
Okay.
So I hope that's what it is.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, well, enough of that, because we got something to dig into. So set your circle pentagram on fire and sit in the middle and get your weird dancers in the background that people seem to just not notice. Did you notice when he's, like, going up in flames that there's these weird, like, dancers behind him?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. All right. Trick or treat. Oh, I'm so excited.
Trick or treat. Not to be confused with trick or treat.
And not to be confused with trick or treats. Another. That's Dude, that's a pretty bad one.
Calm down, people.
Right. This is the... you know what I'm going to end up doing a lot in this episode, so just... deal with it is
deal with it son.
Is side stories a lot. I'm gonna trail off.
Oh I
have a confession.
What is your confession?
That movie Trick or Treat, that you know, R treat, which people really like, and it's like a legit solid standard horror now. I didn't even give it the time of day. We watched it.
You were furious.
I was furious that they even thought of naming it so similar to My Precious Trick or Treat.
How dare they? It takes place on Halloween.
And I still to this day, when I see any reference to it, I'm like, ugh.
Why is this one called Trick or Treat beyond that they're going to air a record on Halloween?
Yeah, because it takes place on Halloween
night. That's the only reason. Because there's like no Halloween decorations. There's some pumpkins.
And there's kids in costumes, and they trick-or-treat, smell my feet. And
never mind. I take it back. Calm down.
Yeah.
Okay, stuff happens. Fine.
Do not speak ill of this film on this episode. I will shut it down.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so 1986. Boy, I can't even think of when I first saw this. This has just been with me.
Well, I'm guessing it wasn't before 1986.
It was not before 1986. Okay, directed by Charles Martin Smith. This was his first film. He went on to totally change his career. He's also an actor, but he did direct a lot of movies. Would you like to know what his claim to fame is after this?
Yeah.
He did Air Bud, and then he did Dolphin Tale, and he did... all those kinds of movies.
Well, those are scary in different ways.
Right.
Maybe he took it, like, real deep. Like, went on the underground side of scary.
Yeah, maybe. That's what he did. Also, I have another confession.
Oh.
I'm going to have a lot about
this. So many.
This is, like, a really personal episode.
Okay. Bear it all. Let it all hang out.
I feel like this is going to be the equivalent when we do the Teen Witch episode with you.
I'm just going to do the rap.
Do the rap constantly. Top that. So... another confession is maybe about a year ago, I cyber stalked him, Charles Martin Smith, the director.
What? Why?
I wanted to talk
with him. What else have you got going on in your life? You cyber stalked the director of Air Bud.
Yeah. No, Trick or Treat. Let's be honest.
Air Bud.
I wanted to talk to him about the film. What? I just wanted some inside scoop, and then I chickened out. I got a contact and I was like, cool, I'm going to email him.
What?
I've done that in the past. They're just people, dude.
Dude, this is unsettling. You sucked the director of Air Bud. I'm going to put it on your tombstone.
Well, I didn't end up contacting him, but I just wanted to chat with him about this film because it's so important to my upbringing. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see what it was like, the process and stuff like that. I thought it'd be fun.
Why not the writer?
Because he directed it, and I feel like he'd have the scoop.
The scoop?
The scoop, and he was available through social media.
Well, you know, maybe if you had reached out, it would have been a slam dunk.
Okay. Well, let's keep moving past that unfortunate confession I just made. So, starring Mark Price as the Ragman.
I actually looked up Mark Price.
Yeah.
And he has had quite a career as a comedic performer.
Oh, I don't know if I would call it quite a career.
Like, he had a real career. Like, he did stand-up in Vegas and made a full-on living, and now he produces stuff.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't like a pretend thing. He really was. And maybe still is, I don't know.
There's a lot of like fun facts that I'll know just that I've known my whole life about this movie, but there's some that I learned in researching for this episode that I never knew, starting with Ragman's role. You know who almost got the role?
Who?
This is going to blow your effing mind.
Okay.
Because it did mine, and I immediately was like, wait. Yes. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Be ready to go. Whoa.
Keanu
Reeves.
What?
He would have been perfect for Ragman.
He would have been so good.
At that era, 86.
He was like the babiest of babes.
And the producers went on to do Bill and Ted, like right after that. Isn't that crazy?
Because they were like, look at this guy. He needs to be in a movie.
Oh, he would have been awesome. I mean, I'm very happy with the way it was cast, but man. Usually when I hear other people who almost got the role, I'm like, that would have sucked. But this, in this case, oh, young Keanu.
You know, I'm just going to put this out here about you, off subject. But I feel like our daughters have been calling you Snape. But you've also got a certain Keanu quality. So I think that if Snape and Keanu had a baby, it would be you.
Whoa.
Okay. Back to this movie.
Not the first. I think I shared that story once on an episode when that guy, another weird person at Goodwill,
you
called
did.
Me John Wick. Okay. So, yeah. So Keanu, I don't know how serious it got, but I think he was one of the ones that was up for the role for sure. And then Tony Fields is our big Sammy Kerr, our lead rock star.
So who was he?
Tony Fields was a dancer. He's a solid gold dancer, actually. He moved out and made a career, a very good career. He's in a ton of music videos, a bunch of like Michael Jackson and Queen. And like he was like a big deal, but he wasn't really an actor. I think he'd done a little Broadway and got cast, but he wasn't the first one offered the role. Gene Simmons was offered the role.
Oh,
and
he wouldn't have been good in that.
Well, and he didn't want to do it to begin with. He was a huge Wolfman Jack fan, yeah. And he was like, I want to be the DJ in this film. That would be really fun. Which, I will say, and I've thought this since day one, he does a great job as the DJ in this role.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good actor, and I always forget that he's acted a lot, and but he's not distracting. Like,
no.
Usually when you get like a rock star in a film...
Yes.
They're very distracting, but
like
I've always
loved
Gene Simmons in this role. I think he did a great job. I think that was a smart choice on his part.
Yeah, because you're just like, oh, yes, Gene Simmons.
Yeah, more importantly, though, is who almost was Sammy Kerr.
Who?
Which is, you'll go like, ugh, whatever, but as for me, this was like, what? And I've known this for a long time. Let's just say that instead of Fastway doing the soundtrack... Wasp almost did the soundtrack.
Oh my goodness.
Blackie Lawless was up to do it. And the only reason why he backed out is because they said, well, we've already got Fastway doing the soundtrack. And he was like, why would I lip sync to that band when I'm in Wasp? We can do it. And the director said, no, we're going to stick with the soundtrack. So he backed out.
Weird.
And pulled out of it. Would have been interesting. And I kind of have mixed feelings because... On the one hand, it would have been way more like, yeah, Blackie is Sammy Kerr. Although I think it would have been hard to separate the two because he was a little too famous in the metal scene.
Yeah.
Whereas Tony's performance is very solid gold dancer, especially on the stage. He's like doing some major spins and we'll get to it. But that's always bothered me. So I feel like there could have been some good. But ultimately, I feel like Tony Fields is Sammy Kerr. And I couldn't see anybody else in the role.
So, and nobody knows who Sammy Kerr is unless they've seen this. So let's dive in.
Okay.
So it starts, the movie starts with a teen who's like Them Against Us kind of kid. Like,
yeah, he's a social outcast.
Yeah, just
a metalhead.
Typical metal kid. And he's complaining about the Airheads and the Braindeads.
Right.
And there's a long sequence of him being tormented at high school, including something that would be horrifyingly traumatic, like the bullies at the school lock him out of the locker room naked.
Oh, yeah.
In front of the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
He's like naked in front of cheerleaders, and one of the cheerleaders takes a Polaroid of him.
Yeah.
And we also learn his name is Eddie, but he goes by, for reasons which remain mysterious, Ragman.
Right.
So much so that his license plate, we learn later, reads Ragman. And so he goes home after his rough day of nudity and, you know, exclusion at school, and he's listening to Sammy Kerr, and he's writing a letter to his favorite rock star, Sammy Kerr, and he's talking about how Sammy would understand because they went to the same high school.
Right. So, and Sammy's, like, become, like, crazy famous now as a metal god.
So he'd gone to the same high school as Ragman, Eddie, and is now super-duper famous. And he's writing letters to him. I guess there's supposed to be a concert there, but we learn that the concert's canceled at some point.
Right.
And he's like, there's, you know, it's just proving his point about how terrible our school is and how misunderstood we are.
Yeah, so I have to mention his bedroom because
it's pretty cool. It's like an enormous attic.
Yeah, the actual space is really cool, but the contents of his bedroom, if you like wanted to know, if you wanted to know what I was like as a kid in the 80s,
yes,
it's this bedroom. Like, he's got, you know, Ozzy poster, this really amazing Sammy Kerr poster that I just dreamed about owning forever. I mean, still to this day, like, it's so cool. And it's up because he got kind of a loft, so it's elevated as though it's like almost an altar to Sammy Kerr, and he's looking down at him.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love
it's
his bedroom
cool.
so much. But that's basically, that was like my bedroom as a kid.
Yes. And then the next day he is watching TV, but he's also listening to headphones and doing his laundry all at the same time, so he kind of misses the news and finally sees that Sammy Kerr is on TV. And then he's watching about, you know, the story about how Sammy was supposed to play in his town. But then it's announced that Sammy Kerr has died in a hotel fire.
Right. At what age?
What is it, 27? 38. Oh, 38. My age.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lives are twinning.
Which, interestingly, in real life, the actor who played Sammy Kerr died at 36.
Aww.
Yeah. He had a very short and very vibrant career.
That sucks.
Yeah.
What a buzzkill. Why'd you share that? So he died in a hotel fire, and then Ragman, obviously. Why does he go by Ragman?
Just call him Eddie,
Eddie
if it bothers you.
It troubles me greatly. Eddie does not take this news well. It actually, the first time I saw this, I was like, oh, whatever. It's just a musician you never met. Although my dad, when John Denver died, he like had to take a minute. So I get it. You really connect with a musician on a like deep level.
Okay. I was kind of that way a little bit with Bowie. It was a little effective. I didn't.
Or Prince.
And Prince was a hard. Those are the only two ever in my whole life of celebrity deaths that I was actually a little like, not in, like, mourning, but for the whole day, I was just out of sorts because, you grow up with these people, and they're more than just entertainment. They, especially in those two cases, and that's alluded to with Eddie and Sammy Kerr, is that it was, like, a way of life, and it
captures that point, too, when you're a teenager, right when you're your most impressionable, and you, like, find your music that speaks to the spirit that you want to follow in your life. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And then after getting this news, Eddie goes to work at a radio station. I don't know if he has a job there or if he just hangs out there.
No, he just hangs out. He's just friends with the DJ. And before that happens, though, how he takes out his rage is Fastway plays. Well, it's supposed to be the Sammy Kerr song, but it's tearing down the walls, tearing down the wall.
Yeah.
And he starts ripping all his posters down. Here's another confession. Is when I saw that movie and I was going through a bit of rage as a young preteen, I thought it'd be really cool to like mimic that. And I would put up like fake like newspapers on my wall so that I could tear them down and get like the feeling of tearing down the wall.
Yeah. But not actually tear down.
Oh, I would never like touch my Judas Priest posters. No. Are you kidding? No, I had like practice ones. Yeah.
Wow.
I was already that thoughtful.
That's really elaborate.
It is, but I also just kind of embodied the character. I connected with Ragman because and if you need proof, you can see my elementary school photos of me wearing metal shirts with being the outcast. Is I was a little metalhead and I related to this. This was my story, was like feeling excluded from everybody else. There was all the jocks and the cool kids and stuff like that. And I mean, even all the way up into junior high. But so this was one of the only films that really kind of spoke to me. And mm-hmm. It's funny now as an adult watching it, it's just a cheesy horror film, but there was something really like profound as a kid, because it just right place, right time, I guess.
All right. So at the radio station, Eddie is there talking to the DJ, who is
Nuke. Yeah. Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons.
Without makeup.
Yeah, it's very unsettling. You're like, who's, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's great. He's so good.
Yeah, he doesn't take it over with his personality. And they kind of talk it out. And then Nuke gives Eddie the only studio demo of the last recording of Sammy Kerr, which, so many questions about how he got one recording, but whatever.
Well, I think that it was kind of, well, he said Sammy gave it to him to play on Halloween night, specific, yes, instructions. And it's an acetate demo, so it's like one of a kind, which just interesting, for the record, I will say, with an acetate, you're not supposed to just play it over and over. It's going to damage it. And I love how this record gets played backwards, forwards, just like nonstop.
No
but,
problems.
Also, I wanted to mention one thing that I picked up on. This is very minor. But when Nuke is introducing one of the songs as Ragman walks in, he's like, we're going to have a Rocktober morning. And I thought that was fun because another classic 80s metal-themed horror film from the era is called Rocktober Blood. Yeah. And I just thought that was kind of a cool little tie-in. So
I wonder if it was intentional.
I don't think so. I think Rocktober is just thrown around all the time.
So the next day at school, the babe, Leslie.
Yes.
She's like the token babe from this film. She gives Eddie the Polaroid, the nude Polaroid of himself, as like a peace offering. She isn't the one who took it. She somehow got a hold of it and was just being kind and giving it to him so he wasn't gonna, you know, be exposed to anybody else.
And we meet Roger too, his nerdy friend.
Yes. And she invites Eddie to a pool party and he's a little hesitant, but agrees to go because she's such a babe and he wants to see her in a swimsuit and he's like a 15-year-old.
Yeah. And what's interesting is how often this trope happens where it's like nerd gets invited to cool kid party. Guess what's going to happen?
It's not going to go well. Every 80s movie.
Hey, here's something interesting about Roger, his nerdy friend. This is the only film he ever acted in,
mm-hmm.
but he went on to have like a really good career. He wrote a bunch of episodes for X-Files. He did The Final Destinations, and then he directed the remake of Black Christmas.
Weird.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty good remake.
Yeah, it's decent.
I liked it. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting story. Okay, so we're at the pool party.
He comes in. The pool party's already raging, and it's like a prep soup.
Can I describe the opening shot of the pool, yes, party where we both had to stop and go, wait, did we just see that right? And they didn't edit it out.
Nope.
For some reason. They didn't catch it. The very opening scene, it's like a wild teen party at a school pool.
They've like broken in after,
yeah, and it's
hours,
like the school team pool. So it's got the lane dividers that are made out of, you know, like plastic floating devices. And the very first scene are two girls jumping into the pool.
It's super cute.
One of them overshoots the jump, full on smacks her head, and then goes in the pool. And both of us were like, did that girl just ram her head into the lane divider?
I relate so hard, though, where you're like just really enthusiastic about your one job and like, you just
action.
Overshoot it.
And she just jumped by like about 6 inches too far. Yeah, so that's what we get. It's a classic scene. There's like parties, jocks everywhere, a couple topless, you know, babes are swimming. And then we see Ragman arrives and is immediately spotted by the bully.
The main bully.
Who has the shortest shorts in the history of shorts. And
the spikiest blonde hair.
Yeah.
Why is it always the blonde guy?
It's like, just classic 80s bully.
Yeah, so this escalates quickly from him just gently bullying to shoving a weight in Eddie's backpack and pushing him in the pool.
Yeah, well, because he's like, hey, you should get out of here. Like, get out of here. And then Ragman's like, nah. And then he goes, hey, you got ears, dildo?
Why would a dildo have ears?
I don't know.
Doesn't even make sense.
Apparently he didn't listen. And so, they retaliated by putting a weight in his backpack and pushing him in the pool.
Yeah,
and
they like straight up try to kill him.
Yeah, he's about to die. And then the babe like saves him.
She had come late.
Yeah, he doesn't take that well though at all.
No, because he thought she had lured him in.
Yeah.
And also it would be really embarrassing for a teenage boy who's like testosterone is raging to be saved by a girl, apparently.
Yeah, how
especially
how dare that happen?
In the 80s, of course. You know, that would have been like double shame. So he goes and goes home and he rages to Sammy Kerr's last recording. He oddly hadn't listened to it yet, which is really weird because I feel like if you're a super fan, you would have listened to it immediately, but he waited till the following night after receiving it.
Yeah, I guess. But
he had
to
wait till his like adrenaline was appropriately
high. Right,
till
he'd been wronged. Well, he listened to it with the right mindset because he was like revenge on the mind. And we get this cool flash as he's listening to it. It's like he gets to see a vision of Sammy in the hotel.
Yeah, dying.
On fire, but he's doing like a satanic ritual.
Yes.
On fire. So he clearly like sacrificed himself. And that's where we get to see this is during this moment where he's kind of having this vision as he's listening to this record.
Yeah.
And then
he's
playing
it backwards at some point.
Well, no, it starts playing itself backwards. Oh, right. And he comes out of the vision and it's just kind of stuck playing this one line over and over backwards. And he takes it off. And then all of a sudden he hears it speaking to him and it's saying, mm-hmm. You're the bait. The bait is you.
Yeah, let the fish hook themselves. The bait is you.
Yeah, and so he's like, what the hell just happened? And this is, I mean, come on, this is so cool.
And
this
it inspires like some, like, solid hijinks.
Yes. And you know what's interesting is this is playing off of the, like, major theme through the 80s with metal is the satanic panic.
Uh-huh.
And when I was reading up on who was being considered, a lot of the rock stars, they originally wanted like an actual metal rock star to be the role. Almost all of them turned it down when they read the script because they didn't want to be associated with
Satanism.
The whole satanic panic. They were like, it's too real right now.
It could impact their record.
Yeah. It was, of course, Blackie Lawless from Wasp was like, hell yeah, I'll do it. So, but most of them didn't want anything to do with it. And that's what I loved about this is because I was living in this moment, listening to metal records, thinking about backmasking and like hidden messages and Satanism and stuff. I mean, I had a huge poster above my ceiling or like on the ceiling above my bed that was a tour poster from Shout at the Devil by Motley Crue. And it was like a montage of live photos. But then right in the middle, it had their logo with a giant pentagram. And it was just like right over my bed because that was just what it was, you know, that was part of the scene in the 80s.
Oh my gosh.
So this film was awesome because it was like, wait a minute, messages are coming through.
And your
parents
are like, just cool, just sleep under a pentagram.
No, yeah, well, like they even checked in.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh my goodness. So he hears this bait message and he goes to school the next day and sets up a ridiculous confrontation chase that is
so cool.
It has so many elements that could go wrong or just not fall into place, but he basically gets the bully that shoved the weight in his backpack to chase him.
Yeah.
Through the school, and he like sets up a chair in some like slippy places on the linoleum, and somehow he gets this bully to chase him throughout the whole school, and it culminates with a bully grabbing a fire extinguisher and spraying a faculty meeting. So he just sprays a bunch of teachers with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, he gets put in detention because of it.
Yeah. And that is all inspired by the backwards demon lyrics.
Yeah, but this is pushing the story forward because he's like, he's doing it. Like, he's helping me. He's helping me finally get back. And so as the film progresses, it's kind of like She's All That. He's like slowly getting cooler. Or he thinks he's getting cooler. That's questionable if he's getting cooler.
Well, he took off his glasses, so he's more
attractive. He's got a headband now, but he goes back to his room, and he's kind of listening to more backmasking.
He's hanging out with... This is where we get to talk to his friend Roger.
Right.
Roger's over there listening. And he's trying to tell Roger about this message and saying it's for him.
Yeah, and Roger's not buying it. He's just like, whatever, dude. There's this scene right here, which I never really caught before, but now I'm like, what? He is a little mad, and he throws down a magazine, and it's a Hit Parader, which was a real magazine. I had those all the time.
Yes.
But on the cover is Sammy Kerr. And I was like, oh, is there a prop out there that exists, which is a fake Hit Parader magazine with Sammy Kerr on the cover? Please tell me there is.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
So his friend is the king of like cool one-liners. He's getting up to leave and he's like, I got a jam.
Which, oh, yeah, that's right.
I was like, oh my gosh, why don't we say we got a jam anymore? And then he also tells Eddie that his cage is starting to shake loose because he's meaning that Eddie's getting a little unhinged with all this.
And he is
the record.
Because he starts to use the record like a Ouija board.
Yes, I wrote that too. He like just asks it a question and starts like playing it backwards.
He's like doing a seance. It's like a magic eight ball.
Yes, there are lots of candles lit.
Yes.
So he says, in the, like an interesting show of friendly support that we didn't see much of in the 80s, he tells him his cage is starting to shake loose, but I'll be here for you if you want to talk about it.
Yeah. And I don't even think that happens now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Really good friend there. You should hang on to that guy.
Well, he gets this plan for revenge through doing his Ouija board talk with the record. And so he's clearly, I guess just to push forward, we don't have to go through every single scene.
No.
But it's like the record is now giving him messages and helping him get back at his bullies. So Sammy's speaking to him through this only known record, which is the
it's
last
like
record.
Getting more and more involved.
And it's starting to do it on its own. Like it's starting to move on its own.
And he's led to room 66 in the high school where the bullies, like, he sits down and he waits for trouble, basically. And the bullies come in. Like,
well, because the record tells him to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he sits down and is eating his lunch when the bully and, like, bully sidekick come in. And he starts to, again, this bully has some frightening issues. He starts grabbing wrenches and throwing him.
And then he smacks his head against a floor. And then he says,
this guy's like homicidal.
He's like, did headbanger bang his head? As he's like smashing his face in.
This is the guy who put a weight in his backpack, who shoved him naked in front of cheerleaders. Like,
yes.
Somebody get that guy in counseling. Good gravy.
Well, he'll get what's coming to him.
Yes. So the bully is throwing tools at him, and then he gets his, like, tie or something caught in this drill machine. I don't even know what machine it is, but it's about to kill him, and Eddie has, like, the choice to just let him die or turn off the machine. And he thinks long and hard before
turning it
off.
It's like a James Bond scene.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, Dr. No letting the laser go up his leg before he's like, yeah, I'll stop it.
Okay.
You know what, too? After seeing this as a kid, I had a fear of shop class.
Really?
Because I feared tools like sucking in my shirts or like loose clothing and stuff like that.
Yeah. Did you take shop?
No, I never took shop. I always wanted to, but I never did.
I did.
Oh, cool. What did you make? Like a little horse or something?
I did welding. No, I welded some stuff. Like, I think my mom sells a plant hanger, and I made I cut like 100 chunks of wood and had to like screw them all together to make a weird planter basket.
Cool.
And I did a bunch of mechanical drawings and stuff. It was cool.
I would have loved to have done it. I just did like 4-H as a kid where, you know, you learn basic random skills like that, but I never got to take an actual shop class in high school or anything.
I loved it. I felt so cool arc welding.
I think that was an elective when we were in high school, and I was in art and band, so I couldn't do another
more
elective.
No for you. Yeah. No outside interests.
No, not
no
at all.
No crossover.
Okay, where are we at? So, let's catch up.
Yes, so Eddie stops the machine. At this point, I'm calling him B-Rags in my notes.
B-Rags? Why?
I have no idea, but that's what my notes say.
Okay.
Okay. So he stops the machine, and then he rocks out and woos. He's like, woo, and rocks out because he feels like that was a successful encounter.
Yeah, he runs back home and puts on more Sammy Kerr. Which, in his room, I mean, just this is too cool for school. He's got all these, like, magazine cutouts and promo photos of Sammy Kerr, which I have scoured the internet for any kind of promotional material, and I haven't seen any of these images. I don't know where they went, but they clearly took them for the film. Yeah. The only chance I ever had, which I immediately regretted because we were just in a tight spot, was I own the vinyl, and the vinyl is very expensive. Well, not very, but it's a pretty pricey one. And I had tried to get it quite a few times on eBay, and it just was too much money. But one time when I was like, I just should just get it right now, it was in great shape, but it was the only time I've ever seen this in, you know, 10 plus years of looking for it on eBay. It was coupled with, if you bought it, a promotional package from the film company that came with 8x10 glossies of like the studio cards of from the film, and it was promo shots of like Ozzy Osbourne and Sammy Kerr and stuff like that, and a letter that came from it and everything, and I passed on it and it sold, and I've never seen it since. And I was like, shit, because I think that's where a lot of these images came from.
Okay, so after this he goes home and like decides he has a plan, and the next day Eddie brings his bully a tape. It's like a weird cassette tape that's kind of shiny and
blank. Yeah, it's
blank.
Like metallic, yeah.
And he gives it to the bully, and he says it's like a peace offering. And then it will scoot ahead to the bully and his girlfriend. They're like parked in front of a lake, like a Lover's Lane style, and they're making out.
Like the classic
this
scene.
This is the scene.
This is the scene that everybody knows from Trick or Treat. Yeah.
Yes, and the bully gets out to pee, which takes an unnaturally long time, so maybe he did more than that.
Yeah.
But the girlfriend is in the back seat of the car, and she's like waiting and waiting, and he's just peeing forever out by the lake. So she grabs his headphones and cassette player, pops in that cassette and listens to it, and green fog comes out of the headphones and onto her body, and she begins like moaning and undressing herself.
No, she doesn't undress herself. The fog like pops her clothes off.
Well, she helps in some spots.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's getting her freak on with the green fog, like fully, and then she kind of opens her eyes and looks up, and it's a green monster thing, like a slime monster or slimy looking monster. And then the boyfriend, the bully guy, comes back to find her. And at first I always forget and think she's dead, but she's just injured.
Okay, so here's a deep cut for the fans out there who have seen this movie, may or may not know this. This scene, yes, it's very, like, infamous for this movie, but that green, like, troll-looking demon creature, there's more to that story.
What?
So that was designed by Kevin Yeager. I think that's how you say his name. He's, like, a big special effects guy. He did, you know, like, Freddy Krueger and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
He worked on this film. He designed that little demon, but the demon, the little green demon, is actually, like, you know how Eddie to Iron Maiden and stuff like that. It was an actual mascot for Sammy Kerr that was going to be used on, like, on his merchandise and his records and stuff like that. And I think, I don't know if I've never really, like, looked into it, but I think if you can capture any images in the film that show like his records or posters, you'll see the little demon, and this is his mascot. He had a name, Skeezix was his name.
Skeezix?
Yeah, it's Skeezix.
Oh, nice. So, yeah, name there you for go. Next child.
That's the little demon that undresses her.
So, yeah, the boyfriend's upset, obviously, because his girlfriend's unconscious and ends up in the hospital.
Yeah, and in, before we get to him coming over to...
We got to talk about the talk show.
Yeah, we get a little talk show. There's a little cameo here.
Why don't you tell us about it?
So, his mom is doing, like, jazzercise or something like
she's
that.
She's just doing, like, she's doing what every mother does.
Like Jane Fonda aerobics.
In her spare time, she's doing some leg lifts and some sit-ups next to her bed. But interestingly, she has put on a full 80s jazzercise outfit.
For sure. Yeah, because you got to do that.
Yep.
And she's watching TV, and on TV is a talk show, and they're interviewing a reverend who...
It's like Donahue style.
Yeah, who happens to look oddly familiar.
Yes.
And it's Ozzy Osbourne playing a reverend. Which, fun fact, he just was ad-libbing all that. Like,
they 100% believe
that.
And
they said that he had, like, a ton of great material, but they couldn't use it because it was too much. So they just had to, like, trim it down. But it's him going on and on about satanic music corrupting the youth and stuff, which is cool. But what makes me laugh is, so we have the VHS copy of this, which is pretty pretty pricey piece to have. But it's got the awesome classic cover of Sammy Kerr in the fire circle, you know, playing his guitar, which is also the poster, which I've been after my whole life and can't get. But when it was reissued on DVD in the, like, the 90s, what's hilarious is to try and market on it. The DVD is not this killer cover art that the VHS has. It's really, really cheesy stock photos of Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh.
That's the cover of the DVD for Trick or Treat. And it's not even them from the movie. It's like them, just random photos
at
of them.
At this point.
And it's like with Ozzy Osbourne and Gene Simmons. But I'm like, Gene Simmons plays a very minor role as a DJ.
So does Ozzy.
And Ozzy plays a very split second role on TV, and that's it. And I just love that they tried to market. What's funny is once it was reissued years and years later, again on DVD and then on Blu-ray, they went right back to the original image
because
they were like,
weird.
What were we thinking? Yeah. But that's where we get the Ozzy little cameo. But then, moving forward...
Ragman Eddie is being a real sourpuss in his room after everything that's happened.
Yeah, he's really freaking out. And but the bully comes over to his house and is like, what did you do to her? What did you do to her? And this is the first instance where Eddie is like, wait, maybe this isn't going as planned.
Yes.
And he kind of wants to back out of it a little. And he's like, ask Sammy through the record, you know, what did you do to her?
Yeah.
And Sammy's like, cheap thrills. Ha, ha, ha.
Yes. And he says there's no end and to this and no end to false metal or something.
No false metal.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no end, no false metal. So he's kind of like shaming Eddie for having a conscience about this.
And it's now Sammy, this is the point in the film where Sammy started to take over.
Yes. And he now starts chanting through the record, the Ouija record, Leslie, over and over, because Eddie wanted to get out of this, but Leslie, the babe, is now a target for Sammy.
This is a great scene where Pepsi, for some reason, spills on the record, and it starts to, like, go really bad, but then Sammy's face starts to appear through...
It's his burnt face, too, like, from the fire.
And here's what's interesting, is as it's pushing through the speaker, I thought, man, this is so much like Nightmare Part 4.
Yeah.
When she, like, the kids are pushing through his stomach when he opens up his shirt. Makes perfect sense, considering the special effects artist, like, who worked on Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, so he's, like, pushing through the speaker, and it's a weird, like, spooky lighting, and Sammy Kerr appears. He's got a burned face.
Oh, he looks so awesome. And he's playing with lightning, but the lightning's like a He-Man style lightning. You know, like, do you remember that electric blue lightning in Masters of the Universe?
That is style. Not natural looking on any level.
It's that.
And so in response, Eddie destroys his records and stereo. And then he tries to get Roger to steal back the tape that had caused the bully's girlfriend to, you know, have her strange, what is it, Skeevix encounter in the car.
Yeah.
So he gets his friend Roger to go and, like, Jimmy the bully's car.
What's with Roger dressing like a cat burglar?
I mean, look, so I would so do that. If somebody was like, you gotta go steal this, I'd be like, first, let me spend an hour dressing like a cat burglar.
I need to put on all black. I need to get a black beanie, pull it over my head, and then I need to look around frantically to see if anybody's watching.
He didn't get caught, so it worked.
It's true. I did want to backtrack real quick to, there is a really cool line when Sammy is in Eddie's bedroom and he's threatening him and he's like, look, you know, you're gonna do this. He looks at him and it's great lighting. I mean, the whole,
it's
like,
so cool.
Yeah, the atmosphere is awesome. And Sammy looks so imposing there. Yeah. He's got all his leather, you know, he's all dressed
and
up.
And his hair.
And his
so
hair
much
is amazing.
Hair.
And he turns around and he says, you should be loyal to your heroes. Mm-hmm. They can turn on you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah, it's such a great line because that's what happens in the film.
Indeed. So Roger gets the tape, and he is planning to destroy it, but
he thinks better of it. I mean, like, why not check it out, right? If you had to go through all that effort. Also, did you notice Roger's sweet ride when he got away?
No.
He's, like, on a bike, but then he kicks it on, and it's one of those, like, motorbike things that, like,
very
you pedal
European.
And it starts up. Yeah. Ciao.
Ciao. So, yes, he plays the stereo, or plays the tape on the stereo, it explodes, and then Sammy Kerr arrives at Roger's. So Roger gets a taste of what, you know, what's been being dished up to his buddy Eddie.
Right before he arrives, Sammy, like, appears. He's listening to the music, and he goes, it's not so unnormal.
Oh, really?
It's a weird line. Yeah.
Then, while Roger's kind of standing there stupefied, Sammy Kerr pulls a woman out of the TV.
Oh, that's a interesting scene.
That's actually terrifying. He just reaches into the TV, grabs an old lady, and flings her dead on his floor.
And she, like, bursts into ashes.
Yes.
And then he, like, tells Roger, like, you will play this tape at the dance tonight.
Or die.
And then Roger, the next scene is him, like, vacuuming up the ashes of this woman.
Like, dark humor.
Complacently vacuuming.
He's like, well, something's got to be done with this.
It is really dark humor. Yeah.
So now we're at Halloween Day. Eddie's mom is going on to a date with some dude. And so she leaves. That's just basically their way of getting Eddie to be alone and unsupervised at this point. Roger goes to the school party with plans to play the tape, and Leslie has gone to the same party. And from this party, she calls Eddie and basically is like, why aren't you here?
Oh, you know what happens right before she gets on that phone? There's a really cool, subtle scene that I've never caught until this last time. Well, because I've watched this. I can't even describe how many times I've seen this, but I've never had to take notes on it for a podcast. When Roger goes to the dance, he slides the tape in and he's about to press play. And Leslie walks up and she goes, Judas? And then he goes, what? And she goes, Judas Priest? And it's such a clever line because she's calling him Judas because he's betraying Eddie. And I've never caught that before. And I just thought that was a really cool scene.
Very subtle.
Yeah.
But Roger does play
totally
the tape.
Judas.
And as she is talking on the phone to Eddie, he kind of tunes her out and is like, what's playing in the background? What's the music? And he panics. He hears the music and he tries to drive his car, but the car is now possessed.
Yeah, it's like Christine style. It's
yes,
great.
But it's like backwards possessed. For some reason, it only drives backwards.
I think it's because they probably drove it normal and then just reversed the footage. That's all I could come up with.
It's a really long scene, too. And basically, it ends up with Eddie hanging off the edge of a bridge in a burning car.
Because what it's doing, the point of this scene is to convey that Sammy now has the power to come through any stereo that can play his music. And because the tape was in the car, he can control the car. So it's implying that, like, in order to keep him at bay, you have to shut down any kind of electronic device that could play the music.
It goes from not only just the music or, like, a stereo to basically he just travels through electricity by the end.
By the end. We're not going to get into that.
Okay.
This is a perfect film.
And so then we go, you know, from the burning car at the edge of the bridge back to the Halloween dance. The band is called The Kickers. They're prepping to play.
The lead singer's upset because his amp's not working. And he's messing with it. And he keeps messing with his guitar.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, the arm reaches out. And Sammy comes out of the speaker and grabs his guitar and takes over.
Oh, I thought he possessed him.
No. And then he, like, does the classic slapping his thigh to get everybody clapping. And then they bust into Rock and Roll, which is, like, one of the best tracks on the whole album. And then...
What confidence to be able to just slap your thigh and get people to, like, stomp their feet and cheer in response.
This is the scene, like, this is the only scene in the whole film we get of Sammy actually performing. Ooh, and this is when you see he was definitely a solid gold dancer. There's even one point where he jumps off the drum riser and does, like, a triple flip, like, triple
like
twist.
You do.
He's got, man, he's really good at what he does, but it's not really in line with Metal God.
It works.
But it's okay. I mean,
he's undead.
Seen my fair share. We just went to Iron Maiden, and Bruce Dickinson definitely was running around.
He's spry.
He's very spry for his age. But he was... So it's not far. I'm just saying they maybe weren't doing as many spins as Sammy likes to do. But, you know, everybody's got their own style.
Yeah, and so people start dying. The crowd freaks out.
Well, he does a literal electric guitar solo because as he's
shooting
Ace Frehley style. When I saw Kiss in concert, Ace Frehley would, like, shoot, like, his guitar like a missile kind of thing. It would just shoot out fireworks kind of. And that's what he's doing, but with, like, laser beams. And it's, like,
it's
disintegrating the people that it attacked. It shoots them and, like, only their boots are left kind of idea.
And it's very upsetting to all these teens who just wanted to go to a dance.
Yeah, it turns into a full-on Great White concert, like, where the crowd rushes and is, like, stampeding everybody. Yeah, it's interesting. And then Sammy... I don't know how this happened, but he's now Raiden from Mortal Kombat.
100%.
He's just like...
We've gone to the electric realm.
He's just teleporting his electricity at this point.
Yes.
Which, no complaints here. And it's awesome.
And during
You can do it.
During the pandemonium, the bully decides this is a great time to confront Leslie.
Yeah, this is a weird scene.
Like, why? Run for your life, bud. But instead, he's like, let me confront Leslie. He tells her about Eddie putting his girlfriend in the hospital with voodoo witchcraft. And then he tries to force himself on Leslie.
Yeah, then he slaps her. Like, and, you know, I get he's the, like, point. They're trying to, like, make him, like, look, this guy is the filth. But we already knew that?
I knew that from
I knew that
one.
From the moment I saw the length of his shorts, I knew that he was filth. So I didn't need, like, reinforcement.
Aww, you can wear shorts any length you want, and you're not filth.
Okay, but...
But if you put a weight in somebody's backpack...
Right. But he gets what's coming, because right here, he's in the hall, and Ragman comes up, and he's like, you gotta get out of here, man. And he's like, shut up, and pushes him, and then Sammy comes up behind him and blows him up.
Yep.
It's pretty awesome. And then they realize they need to... They get the circuit breakers and shut him down because he's traveling through the electricity.
At this point, it's purely electricity.
Yeah. He's come back now because his powers are, like, almost complete because it's almost midnight on Halloween.
Yes.
And Sammy comes.
And the whole idea is that he wants to be played at the radio station at midnight on Halloween.
Yeah. And there's this really cool scene right here. It's probably one of the coolest scenes in the whole movie where Sammy's... He's there. He's, like, killing everybody. And then Roger goes to the circuit breaker and he shuts it down.
Yeah.
But right as he's about to, Sammy's coming at him. And then as he slams it into the circuit breaker and shuts it down, Sammy's like reaching towards him and then disappears through the like electricity. It's really cool. Yeah. It's like, I know this is a super low budget B, but there's some scenes in here that I love. And that was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so the police are after Ragman because they think he is the one who's causing all this havoc.
All the mayhem.
Because everybody's screaming and running out of this dance. It's on fire.
Yes.
Like, it's crazy.
It would be upsetting.
And Leslie decides this is a good time to stop him in the alley and say, I need the whole story.
Yeah. Like, lay it out for me during the chaos.
And Eddie's like, sure.
So let's
starts talking about basically what we, the viewers, already know. We didn't really need this, but
recap.
Luckily, it's quick. And then we get a scene where he pulls up to the radio station because he realizes, oh, shit, there is one more recording. They thought they had destroyed all the recordings.
Yeah.
But Nuke at Wizlip, WZLP, the radio station, which makes me laugh because when did you first see this?
What, Wizlip?
Well, I mean, you know Wizlip, but like when, that would have been high school, right?
Yeah, I would have seen it when I was 16.
Did I show this to you like immediately after meeting you?
Yeah, pretty much.
This would have been high on the list of must-sees.
Yeah.
This was around the Mirror Mirror time, wasn't it?
Yep.
And Silent Night, Deadly Night, where we went through all of those together.
Yeah.
Okay. I was so happy you got to see this. But Wizlip's lit up, and this is where Ragman runs in and says, it's an extreme emergency. Extremely extreme.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of want a shirt that says extremely extreme.
You should get it.
I
Make
know.
It. You can do it.
Nobody will get it.
Do it now.
You'll get it.
Do it.
Yeah, you'll understand it.
But anybody else will just laugh because it's funny.
Yeah. So Nuke is going to play Sammy Kerr's album because he doesn't know any better. He's like, yeah, man, this is going to be awesome. Can't wait to hear it. And then Sammy comes through basically all the stereos now. He's just taking over.
Yep. There's nothing that's really been an impetus to get to this point. He just suddenly is more powerful. Is it like the buildup to Halloween that's
Yeah, I think his powers are getting stronger as it gets closer. And Eddie is now back at his house because I don't remember why he went to his house now that I'm thinking about it.
I don't know.
But he's trying to shut off all the stereos, and he forgets that the little tiny stereo up in his shower that's hanging on, which is so 80s.
Totally.
That's hanging on the shower rod thing. He left that on, and so Sammy's got a way in because they were shutting him down, basically. And he gets in, and then that's when also his bathroom, Sammy arrives, and his bathroom gets a full-on, like, Night of the Comet 80s makeover where it's got the, like, blue and green and pink lighting.
Yes.
Like Vamp. Remember that movie too?
Oh, yeah.
So great. I love the lighting.
Yes.
So it gets that kind of makeover. And Sammy starts to come at him in the bathroom. And this is where we realize Sammy is allergic to water because
he's now electricity.
And he slips and puts his hand in the toilet.
Yes.
And he's like, freaking out.
Yep.
And so now he's got a weakness, and we now have a way to defeat Sammy Kerr.
Yes. And so they end up back at WZLP. Eddie and Leslie have now commandeered a cop car and headed to the radio station because they're like, it's the end of the world. We can steal cop cars, I think. And they find it's basically an 80s tech tornado. It's just
it's
like
cool.
Floating around and stuff.
It's like if Ghostbusters, a scene in Ghostbusters was haunting a radio station.
Yeah, just an 80s tech tornado.
Yeah.
And so Eddie captures Sammy Kerr in the back of a police car at this point.
Well, he's taunting him because he's driving down the car. He's driving down the street in the car.
Yes.
And he's trying to get him to appear in the car.
Yeah.
And one of the things he says when he's taunting him is like, how about that toilet? and then
how about it,
what
Sammy?
what really like gets him. He also says, you look a little flushed. It's so dumb. And then finally Sammy
he like materializes in the backseat of the car.
He can't take it because Eddie calls him poser.
Yes.
And he's like, and arrives.
I'm no poser.
Yeah, and he's in the back of the cop car.
Do you remember, though, when calling somebody a poser was like the ultimate?
Oh, super ultimate.
Insult?
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like in our age group it still is.
And it worked. It worked on Sammy.
Yeah.
He materializes in the back of this cop car, and Eddie drives, does not jump out, just drives off a bridge.
Yep.
Multiple stories.
Door closed. Like, death upon impact.
Into
normally.
The river, but yes. Somehow does not die.
He's just cool.
And Leslie destroys the radio station at that very same time.
Yes.
And that has destroyed Sammy Kerr.
Done.
And
deal.
That is the way the movie ends.
No, then Eddie and Leslie smoocheroo. They have
sure,
a big yeah. old kiss.
And that is the end of Trick or Treat.
And he decides he's a DJ now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The very, very. And he's like, hey. Because apparently Gene Simmons doesn't want his job.
Nope.
Yep. So.
That's the end of the movie.
That is Trick or Treat. Happy Halloween, everybody.
We got a jam.
I am so excited that we got to talk about this. I hope it was fun for you. What are your thoughts? I don't know how many times you've seen this now, and I know that I force it upon you constantly, but we did wait on this. We didn't watch it last Halloween.
No, I haven't seen it in several years.
Yeah, and I knew that we were going to do it for this Halloween, and so it was kind of fun to build up to it. But did you remember it really well? Does
yeah.
it hold up to you? Or are you just like, I don't get this at all?
No, it's a solid film. I enjoy it for sure. It's great. It's fun. It's a little peek into baby you.
Yeah. Well, it's got all the elements you need in a classic 80s movie.
Yeah.
But for an 80s metalhead such as myself, like as a kid, mm-hmm. this is seriously the perfect film. I mean, it's got everything I need in a film.
Yes.
And it holds up. I love the soundtrack so much. I mean, I listen to it throughout the year constantly. It's a really good record. That Fastway did an awesome job on the score.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I've got it on vinyl. I've got it on cassette. I mean, it's such a great score. But, you know, I get it. If people don't dig this film, I totally understand. Because this, if you don't have a connection, I can see how this is just your run-of-the-mill B-movie. But if you really appreciate 80s horror, this is like a must-see, in my opinion.
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah, this is a high recommendation.
I mean, it's not Teen Witch or anything, but it's good.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Well, I guess we did watch Teen Witch not too long ago, so it's not like I'm going to be like, I wonder how it holds up.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Anyway.
Okay, well.
This is good, too.
That is the episode. I hope you enjoyed. If you like what you hear or you want to tell a friend, please do. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at LaserGraves. Anywhere you get your podcasts, we're there. I mean, it's...
there we are.
There we are. Like Sammy Kerr peering through your stereo and your
headphones. We travel through
headphones.
Electricity now.
But we travel as green, like fog.
Yep.
And we seduce you as you listen to our episodes.
You can tell when your earbuds have now gotten goopy
yeah.
on your ears.
Also, I mean, I'm not going to apologize for this, is that when you listen to this episode... If your, like, shirt starts to just... The buttons pop off and you're feeling it, like, hey, I can't...
No, creepy.
It's just the way our podcast is.
No.
It's just that good.
No, thank you. Don't do that.
If you want to follow our personal accounts on Instagram, I'm at death at 33 RPM.
Hey.
The European release of this movie. Hey.
I have no affiliation to this movie, but I go... at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
Right. Okay, well, we'll see you again next week. Oh, Halloween will be over and it'll suck. We'll come up with something, some Thanksgiving themed.
Do we have to have a theme?
No.
We do what we want.
That's right. I actually think I know what we're doing next week, but I'll
what?
Keep that.
Shh. Teen Witch.
Okay. It'll be a bonus episode. All right. Bye.
Bye.